What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's also you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is a Night Call special announcement. We're so happy to be back from our hiatus and with our new network, iHeartMedia. For the next 2 weeks, we'll be opening a time portal and releasing the episodes we recorded during the break with some very special guests and excellent Night Calls from our listeners. We'll also be releasing an extra episode next week to thank you for your patience. And now that we're back, give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Now back to your strange days and lonely nights.
It's 11:48 p.m. in a research island in the Long Island Sound, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I am Tess Lynch in Los Angeles, and with me I have
Molly Lambert, and joining us from New York we have
Emily Yoshida.
And we'll be joined in the second half of the show today by writer John Levenstein to discuss his new show, Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein. But first, an Area 51 update.
Yeah, so I can't remember when I saw this, but this was viral at some point, I want to say last Wednesday, so it's old news by now,
but there was apparently...
It's Night Call news. It was very up our alley, and I felt like I had to, like, address it on our... Like, I felt like I was a spokesperson for a big company, and it was like, yes, we've seen... We know about the viral Facebook invite.
Night Call is aware.
We've been made aware of this. I felt like I was the U.S. government having to address.
I was very confused. It was a Facebook invite to storm Area 51.
Yeah.
Yeah, started by an account called, shitposting, because I'm in shambles, so you know it's probably for real. At this point, it has over 1 million RSVPs, which I was joking means like five people will actually show up for it. I think the full text of the invite is just like, if we Naruto run, which is a specific style of anime running where your arms are back and you run really fast, they won't be able to stop us. I guess the stated goal was to free the aliens. Look, I mean, okay, all of this is stuff that I am behind in theory. I'm just saying, like, I think I was going through the person's account who posted this, the shit posting, because I'm in shambles, because I was just like, what level of shit post is this person? Like, are they a horrible, like, 4chaner?
Right.
Or are they just, like,
having a laugh?
An idiot teen. Yeah. Yeah. And it seems more like idiot teen having a laugh. Like, I went through almost their entire history and I was like, there's nice. Nothing here that's, like, crazily racist or anything like that. It's all just like silly, you know, shit posts. But still, I mean, I think the person was sort of like overwhelmed by the degree to which it went viral and also how many dead serious people.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. That's the most interesting thing, is that there are the people who are dead serious, the people who are not at all serious, and then the very interesting gray area between them where you just can't tell if these people are serious or not.
I was so confused because I was like, I didn't know that we were still doing things like this as a joke anymore.
Right.
Like, as far as I can tell, in 2019, when people are like, we're forming a militia and going to the pizza place, they like do it.
Right.
So this also seemed kind of ill-advised because it's a military base and you're not going to get very far. It's not like...
It's quite armed.
The official statement was like, please don't. Just please don't.
But I've seen a lot of interesting talk around this where people are like, is this a subconscious reaction to wanting to take people out of ICE concentration camps?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does feel like...
Somebody's like, why don't you just start a petition to do that then?
Well, right. But
that's
people
the thing.
Did
it's subconscious, though.
Yeah, I think 4,000 people showed up in L.A. Outside a detention center. I think, I mean, in a way, it's like nice to see something that is kind of just like a good framing on how everybody's so frustrated by, you know, just feeling this immediate need to change things and how like everything you do is still insufficient because
it's like a massive projected fantasy.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that was like. The joke that I posted was like, we'll totally join in to free the aliens from Area 51 once we've, you know, taken care of a couple of more important things right now. But I mean, I do feel like it could be a joke about, you know, that kind of powerless feeling of not being able to do anything about everybody in these ICE detention facilities. Or it could be a joke on these like crazy conspiracy theorists who go and raid the
QAnon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And in that way you can understand why it went viral. It just resonates.
Yeah. It could be both. You know, sometimes it's fun to just join a group. More fun than being by yourself, no matter what the group is. Let's talk about a little movie called Midsommar.
Oh my god, you guys,
Midsommar.
We saw Midsommar. At our respective coastal locations. And then we came together to talk about it. We've all been very excited to talk about this movie.
We've had some time to think about it. And I wonder if you guys have the same experience that I was very glad actually to have some time to let it breathe in my brain. When Molly and I came out of the LA screening, we were both like, what does it mean? And then realized it's going to take a long time to figure it out probably. But we all really enjoyed Midsommar. Obviously, if you haven't seen it, you should go see. But don't go with someone you're dating, because that's been established to be a bad idea. Yeah.
I also want to say that another person told me about the Blue Valentine curse, which Tess has spoken about on the podcast before, that if you watch that movie with a significant other, you will break up. and that Drew Spears from the This Podcast is Self-Care podcast said he once talked about the plot of Blue Valentine with a girlfriend.
That'll do it.
They broke up.
Yep. You don't have to actually sit through the movie. You can have a discussion about what you thought about the movie, and that can make you break up. It is I did a poll a while ago on Twitter, and only like 70% of people broke up who were surveyed after watching Blue Valentine. But I'm going to go ahead and say fake news. 100% of you will break up. 100%.
Only 70.
I know. I mean, I was like, what is going on? Who is messing with my poll?
Midsommar forced a lot of self-reflection on the part of everybody.
Yeah.
About bad trips.
It did.
Bad trips and bad relationships. Yeah. Or just like stale. They don't even need to be like, I think the kind of point of the movie, or why a lot of it works for me, is that the relationship doesn't need to be like operatically bad. It can just be kind of dysfunctional and not like, you know, something that people should, you know, both parties should, you know, get out of and just, you know, cut their losses. But it doesn't need to be anything, you know, I mean, it's like kind of emotionally abusive and manipulative in some ways, but that's about it. But even still, like, that's all it takes to go into this sort of heightened environment of this Midsummer Festival in Sweden and like have every single aspect of it exposed and open for
this prompted me to tell Tess about the time when I graduated college and I went to visit my college boyfriend who was abroad. We were like technically on a break, but we were like theoretically going to get back together when I went to visit him. And I'd never been to Europe before, and I got there and he had a new girlfriend that he hadn't told me about, because he was like, she's 26, so she knows that it's not serious. And I told her, when my old girlfriend gets here, we're going on a trip together. And then we went on a trip together, and it made me think about that a lot during this movie. But we didn't, it wasn't, it, you know, I was mad at him. And then at a certain point I was like, but also, gotta enjoy this trip.
Oh my God, I would not have been able to handle it as well. I remembered when this happened in college, but when Molly told me about it again, I got the chills of how awful that is. I have a really hard time traveling anyway, so I kind of can't. I don't think I ever really took a trip. I never took like an extended trip with anyone I was dating, probably because I knew that I would lose my mind.
It's a litmus test.
It's a super litmus test.
You know instantly whether or not it's going to work.
Right. And this is like, this person had already like shown me when I showed up that they were no longer like. So then right. I was like, we're alone on a trip together. How weird is that? Because I don't trust you anymore, but also like going to go on this trip and have to like prove my worth in some weird way. And then we went to Croatia instead of, you know, horrible things happening. It was fine.
Yeah.
We did go to a weird festival though. In Austria, the weirdest place I've ever been, which this movie also made me think about.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to like, we were in Vienna and this waiter was like, go to the festival on the Danube. And then it was literally like a state fair, like a Viennese state fair. So it was like people cutting up logs with chainsaws and playing Austrian pop punk and like eating fried food.
Well,
great.
Well, in Midsummer, we should summarize the plot for those who haven't seen it. It is about a young woman named Dani, played by Florence Pugh, she suffers from some anxiety, it seems like, already. And then a horrible thing happens to her family, which we shall not spoil here, that kind of sends her to a very dark place for a long time. And meanwhile, she's dating this guy whose name I can't remember because he's just, it's
Christian.
Probably something like, oh,
Christian.
It's Christian. That's right. Yeah. But played by Jack Rayner, who is not the best boyfriend, kind of like a clod. He's in some kind of graduate school and he's an anthropology student. And so him and his buddies have planned this like wild summer trip to Sweden because one of his friends is Swedish, grew up on a commune, and they have this wild festival every summer. So all these dudes are going to go, and these two, Dani and Christian, are still together for some reason. And she decides that she wants to come along with them, kind of to their disappointment. So they all go to the festival. They do a lot of hallucinogens. The sun never goes down. And she has a journey of self-discovery among the flower people.
That's the plot of the movie. The end.
Yeah.
I have a theory about this movie.
Yes.
Stand by. It's my theory the moment I saw it, and I'm going to stand by it weeks later. I think this movie's about white supremacy, y'all.
Okay, I'm going to back that up. Because Molly brought that up and I was like,
No, it's not, because that was the first thing I thought, was this movie is about like a white blonde girl and she goes to Sweden and she's accepted. It's all scary white people doing scary European things.
It's true.
Really captures that feeling of being in Europe and being weirded out by the traditions.
There's
and the
also
oldness.
I mean, I think that Well, go ahead.
Oh, I found a Business Insider article that talks about Ari Aster talking on a podcast, I believe, or in an interview. But Ruben, so there's a character in the movie that kind of is like a commentary on closed societies and incest. This is a commune of people in Sweden, and they go to great lengths to not inbreed except when they intentionally inbreed to produce an oracle, basically. And there's an oracle named Ruben. And it says in the Business Insider, they're like, in Aster's words, Ruben embodies the political message of the film, which is perhaps partly critiquing the global rise of xenophobia and the return of the far right in Sweden. As Aster said in an interview, if you consider Swedish history, it's a very closed society. And what does that really mean? There are things happening in Sweden right now that are echoes of things that happened in the Second World War. There you go. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Because, mm-hmm. again, I do think there is part of the way that the far right pushes their ideology is to be like, we have to go back to this older, more innocent time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when everybody was these beautiful girls everywhere in flower crowns and everything was great. And all we had to do was kill some people for the crops every once in a while. And I did get super. And also the Nazis are very into this kind of esotericism. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Nazi love that weird occult stuff. And turns out that the form of Swedish paganism was the same form of paganism in Germany. So there is a common history there.
We should take our night call from
that's what I was gonna
listener
say.
In
yeah.
Sweden who has some inside intel on it.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
This is a night email, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's a night email from, I'm probably totally mispronouncing his name, but it's Özgür, yeah.
I'm Özgür. You might know me as Bordeaux Blues on Twitter, writing to you from Stockholm, Sweden, to hopefully share something of use to your episode about Midsommar, as well as my general bewilderment I felt because of the experience around this film. I saw the film at its European premiere here with a bunch of producers and the Swedish actors present a few days after Midsummer's Eve, which we observe as a holiday, always landing on a Friday, making the following Saturday, Midsummer's Day, a day off. Hundreds of thousands of people leave the major cities for their hometowns, unless you're from Stockholm like I am, to be with their extended families and maybe raise a maypole and ring dance around it and definitely eat fermented or pickled herring with potatoes and then get very drunk on beer and schnapps. You drink up, you sing a song, you fill the glasses, you repeat. All of which can lead to messy situations. Even the official website for Sweden points out that, quote, legend has it that the night before Midsummer's Day is a magical time for love. It still is, in a way. During this night, many a relationship is put to the test. Under the influence of alcohol, the truth will come out, which can lead both to marriage and to divorce. So Özgür goes on to talk about a group of people like cliff diving while they were drunk, and that ended very badly.
Somebody got impaled on a pipe.
People being careless and not noticing bears sitting in the middle of a desolate forest road, fires that people light burning out of control because they're too drunk to handle them. The disasters befalling the poor tourists in the film are, at least to me, just exaggerated and more murderous than the stuff you almost always hear has happened to someone you know every summer. The wild disorientation you feel from the constant light isn't strange either. Despite living with very little light for 7 to 8 months, the near constant sunlight during summer is still jarring, even if you've lived here all your life. Your mind doesn't really adjust to it, and you need blackout blinders and sleeping masks to get through the days with 2 hours of twilight, not dark, for a few months, and that's just in Stockholm, which isn't in the north. Florence Pugh, looking exactly like someone you'd run into at a Midsummer celebration or just wandering around here in general, adds to the uneasy feeling of it all being just a little too close to home, just like A24 buying the Midsummer hashtag on Twitter did, which added an emoji of her wailing, which became truly strange when Swedes started tagging their Midsummer photos.
That's amazing. Yeah, this is really interesting. I learned about Midsummer maybe like a year ago because a friend of mine went. And it was very much like the setup for this movie. It was my friend Mike Hernandez Stern went with his friend Max, who's Swedish, back to Max's hometown for Midsummer. And I said to him, are you sure you want to go into the forest with a bunch of like white Swedish people? You know, you're a Mexican Jewish person. Are they going to sacrifice you for the crops? And then there was a movie about it. So,
well,
just my personal stereotype of all pagan celebrations is that I think I'm going to be the one who gets killed.
Well, maybe. Also, you love pagan celebrations, though, yeah. Molly. I feel like we've talked about this so many times. Like,
yeah. Well, I think, I mean, obviously, this movie is in many ways a remake of The Wicker Man, which is about another place, sort of a weird ethno-state removed from time, where they still do the pagan thing. So I did get really into researching pre-Christianity, and found out that a lot of the stuff in Midsummer ripped from the headlines.
There was something called, he didn't make up a lot of stuff, just like totally whole cloth.
Yeah, something called something called a bloat, apparently, B-L-O with an accent T, was a thing that you had to do every summer where they would sacrifice a few people to ensure that the crops remained going good.
Of course.
That being a widespread phenomenon among every culture in pre-Christianity, it is really weird and interesting how everybody like refers back to that as this time of brutalism, when obviously we live in an extremely brutalist, horrible time now that is just sanctioned. And, you know, some of what they were saying was very seductive of like, oh, we just acknowledge that like you kill the old generation and that's how you get the new generation.
Also, by the way, friend of pod Colin Dickey wrote about Midsummer for Mother Jones, and his take on it was that it was basically a commentary on people criticizing socialism, which I was like, also a very interesting read.
Right. Well, so this is more where I fall with this. I don't think it's not about white supremacy, and I think the reason that it takes place there is for like very boring industry reasons, because he got an assignment from a British producer, like, or
even
from
though
a
that's
Swedish
true,
producer.
I think the fact that it's Sweden is part of what makes it interesting, because of all those things being played into it. And like, honestly, as somebody who reads a lot about like Germany leading up to the Nazis, like a lot of the stuff that the Nazis used, like the Nazi youth, came out of stuff that Germans already did and loved, that all had to do with like scouting around outside and being in groups and like living communally. And the other branch of that is like hippies, you know, comes mm-hmm. out of that. So obviously it's like, I don't know. Tess was just also talking about something she heard about that was like a tech attempt to update communes, but it costs so much money.
Yes. It's like $1,800 a month for just a bedroom, and then you get to enjoy communal suppers. I was like,
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't think that it's not about white supremacy. And I think that that imagery is like being used very intentionally, of just like the creepiness of a town or a village just full of white people, like dressed in white. Like I think that he knows what he's doing with on the aesthetic level there. But I think the way that the movie hits deeper for me, and it's not in opposition to that as a theme, but I think it's like maybe a little broader, is this idea of like how a community can make your individual feelings feel bigger. So that is like obviously a phenomenon that happens with the alt-right, that happens with these sort of how people get radicalized online, but it also happens in more mundane ways. And I think like this kind of shows it happening through a breakup. And like, I was just thinking about like, you know, sometimes you see somebody on Twitter or something who is having a hard time or is mad about something. And you know, because it's Twitter, you get the very brief Cliff Notes version of it. But then if you do that, you can get like a chorus of people in your mentions, like grieving with you, telling you that you're right to feel upset. In some cases, like drumming up your feeling of being upset, mm-hmm. like providing an echo chamber to make your individual feeling that up until then you were feeling by yourself a big shared thing that is even more justified and can be weaponized really easily too.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I think, I think what we're all saying is like, and then that feeling of groupness, which is a good thing in some ways, can be like manipulated in two directions. And those directions are socialism and fascism.
Yeah.
And that is where it feels like everything is going right now anyway, is into one of those two directions. So I think the movie, I mean, we all really liked it. It obviously provoked a really strong reaction in all of us, which I think.
Well, I also.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. And it's been interesting to see how people have responded to this also compared to how they responded to Hereditary, Ari Aster's last movie. Because I really like Hereditary, but like it didn't really get under my skin, which feels weird because it's like very creepy on a very kind of profound level, and it's very upsetting.
That's funny. You're probably the only person who got more creeped out by this one than that one.
Yeah. I didn't. No, it's not that I got more creeped out by it. Like in many ways, Midsommar isn't really trying to be a horror film in the way that Hereditary is. It's
funny.
More just like
It's
like it's funny. It's like kind of just more an intense experience than much less so than just like a horror genre film.
It's like a Jodorowsky comedy is how it felt.
Sure.
To me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It has. Yeah. But I think like. I think that it kind of depends on how I for me, I don't really have a huge like family, and I don't like the dynamics of a family are not dynamics that I obsess about a lot, because it's just never been a big part of my life.
Right.
But like relationships that I have with other people, like even just like the experience of traveling with people who don't want you to be there, that kind of stuff is all like very deep for me. So like that was very, I felt this one on a much deeper level.
He finds like the good veins of discomfort to tap into. Cause I definitely, I mean like Hereditary, I think maybe it is just like, it affects you more. Maybe if you have a sibling when you're just mm-hmm. like, oh, that feeling of like,
yeah,
looking
totally.
Out for your sibling and caring about them. But yeah, I think at Nightcall we would agree that like all the readings are valid.
Well,
you know?
I read something interesting that where Ari Aster said that he wanted the movie to function where the first for the first viewing you see it as kind of like a straightforward story, and the Harga have like their own, you know, motivations, and like Danny kind of comes in and it's a story about her like interacting with them. But then he wanted, you know, on subsequent viewings for you to kind of see the Harga as like the externalization of how Danny is feeling, and how, you know, there are all of these scenes where they mimic her grief and they mimic her anger. And so in a way it's he said it was like a fairy tale for Danny, where to everyone else it was like a horror story, but to her it's like a fairy tale. And I think like all of Ari Aster's, I mean, all of Ari Aster's movies, and I've only seen two of them. I didn't see his first, which was The Strange Thing About the Joneses. Is that the name?
It's a short, I think.
It's a short,
yeah. Short film, yeah.
But they all deal with families and dysfunction within families, mental illness within families. And I think pretty much, I think most people who have a family can understand what it means to be, to have a family member who has either, you know, either they're neurotypical or they have a mental illness, and how that kind of becomes this thing that's specific to your family that's closed off and you can't really share with people outside your family. I don't, you know, I feel like in the beginning, this setup of Danny's family experiencing this tragedy and her needing to reach out beyond her actual nuclear family for support and being very isolated within that, in a way, her traveling to a commune where the family is not necessarily biologically related, but they all share the same kind of like mythology. So there's no family secrets.
Right.
There's
again,
no family shame.
Yeah.
It's a shared shame.
But again, it's like they're all creepy white people with blue eyes and blonde hair.
But this is something that I think everybody's experienced, regardless of if you're like a part of the Aryan nation or not, right?
Yeah.
Like you can feel alien, especially like people who are gay and like don't feel included in their family and find a second family mm-hmm. outside of it. Like there are a lot of positive applications
right,
for that.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Exactly. And wanting to find a family outside of your own family. I think that's why for her, it's a fairy tale, is because even though there are mm-hmm. so many fucked up things happening among this group, there were already so many fucked up things happening in Danny's own life.
Right.
But
she
the issue was that she could not share that with people. Like no one understood. And now she's in a place
and
where...
Yeah.
You found a quote from Ari Aster also that supports my thesis about how the people of color who come on the trip are all killed off and not part
well,
of the being.
Well, yes.
Not,
so, yeah, they basically, I'll find it.
Basically, it was that they are not chosen to be mated with.
Yes, the idea
explicitly
being
explicitly because it's to keep the like the,
it's well yeah.
Air,
I mean it's just something that you do notice of like okay well the people who are sticking out as not being white Aryan people are you know dispatched
it reminded me of the creepy atmosphere. And again, maybe I'm bringing my own reading to it because of my own feelings about Germany and like you know European paganism and you know places that. Weird places in Europe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always find all that kind of culture really creepy and the fetishization of it by Americans, especially to be really creepy. You know, all the sort of like Scandinavian cooking. It's like, what are we really?
Well, there's also, I read a theory that was not, it wasn't backed up by a lot of stuff, but it was very interesting that the student, the, you know, whatever anthropology student who ends up inviting these other friends of his to visit. It's his village. It's his family. There's a theory that maybe he chose Danny and that the whole tragedy that happens to Danny earlier is in fact orchestrated by this student because he's basically trying to bring her into the fold.
I saw it as that he found a person who was coming out of like an abusive fucked up situation and preyed on them
like
because he knew.
But it's also it's technically she's like 25, it's her birthday, and according to the Harga Seasons of Life, which plays a really big role in the narrative of the movie, she's in her own midsummer, like she's literally in the middle of the summer season of her life. So I mean it does seem as though she was kind of like handpicked.
Yeah, and I remember at the beginning being sort of like, oh, why did they pick such a like Jennifer Lawrence looking ass girl? You know, and then I was like, oh, because it has to be, you know?
Yeah, that's why. Also, I'm not 100% positive on this, but I'm pretty sure. Like, Florence Pugh is not a natural blonde. Like, they made her blonde for this movie, and I think that also shows how intentional it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, she's really great in the movie, I thought.
She's so good. She's so good.
Everybody was good. And I liked the creepy guy who brings them all in. He was really good, I thought.
Yeah, he's, like, a really interesting character, I think. Like, the whole part where he, like, draws the picture of her and, like, he really is so kind to her, more so than anybody else on the trip.
But it's also
it's
so
just, like,
manipulative. so, yeah, needless to say, we've all been thinking about this movie a lot since seeing it. Yeah, I mean,
just to plug a little bit, I did a pretty long interview with Ari Aster on Vulture that you can read. I think it's in our newsletter that our Night Call newsletter that we sent out.
It was in this month's newsletter.
Yeah. I feel like this movie really captures the feeling of being in another place, of being in somewhere that is not your home, and having to decide if you are going to feel homesick or just like give yourself over to how different it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Night Call Commune coming soon.
No, thank you. No way.
Communal tables as far as the eye can see.
Night Call Commune will be like a bungalow court. So everybody has their own space.
That's a good idea. Can I briefly just introduce a palate cleanser email from a listener about the cat fox?
Yes.
Okay. Because I must. Yes. We got a listener email the other day. The subject was cat fox bit my brother. And I'm just going to force us to read this now. Dear Nightcall, I was listening to the episode where you talked about the cat fox, and as you described it, I slowly began to realize that it might be the animal that bit my brother a few years ago. My younger brother was on a hiking trip in Corsica, and late one night on the trail, he was attacked by an animal that he said looked like a giant cat or a fox. Not wanting to take the chance that it might have been rabid, he cut his trip short and found a hospital that could examine the bite on his foot. For years, my family have made jokes about the fox that attacked him on vacation and how strange it was, considered they don't normally go near humans. I called him and asked him to look up this animal. He said that the place where it was discovered is the exact part of the island where it happened. Also, the fact that they're nocturnal and aggressive also fits with his story. So although they're cute, don't go looking for the cat fox unless you want to get bit.
Wow.
Yep. Thanks.
Oh my God.
Okay. What if I do want to get bit because I want to turn into a were cat fox?
I think you might just get rabies and die. So don't do that. You can just.
But it
cosplay.
Might feel the same. Yeah. I mean, you know, who knows?
You can just go in an otherkin direction.
What
with
if
it.
I get rabies, but I feel like I've become a cat fox?
Yeah.
Mysterious burglaries keep happening at night.
Oh, by the way, a long time ago on this podcast, I talked about on Legal Reddit how the bats in an abandoned attic were going to give everyone in the house rabies, and someone corrected us and said, like, not all bats have rabies. And we issued that correction. But I have now come completely full circle where I am going to buy a bat Airbnb is what they are called. It's a bat house that you keep in your
An
yard.
Air bat and bat.
An air bat and bat. Nice. I'll buy one. I'm actually thinking I might wait until fall just to be seasonally appropriate, but I will report back.
Wait. Go on.
I'm getting a bat house for outside so bats will eat my mosquitoes.
What? There are bats?
Yeah.
There are bats. I've seen bats in Griffith Park, I guess.
Yep.
Bats are so cool.
Got to invite more bats to this party in LA.
After we were talking on the podcast, I was talking about this Junji Ito short story about bats that I've been thinking about a lot. That's what I thought you meant an air bat and bat was going to be. It was like a house where you let bats feed on you.
No. But we'll see. You know, seasonal depression, I might have to go down that road. And if so, I'll report on that.
Makes things up a little bit.
Yeah.
What does a bat house look like?
I'll show you a picture and we'll put it in the show notes. But
do they just come like eat food? It's like a birdhouse for bats?
They live there. They like to be huddled close together.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's where we're at with the bats now.
Well, Speaking of being goth AF, we have a guest for the pod this weekend, John Levenstein, talking about his show, Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein. Did I get it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
So that is coming up in just a second.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
And now joining us, our very special guest, John Levenstein, writer and creator of the new show, Frankenstein's Monster, Monster Frankenstein.
Almost. Frankenstein's Monster's Monster Frankenstein.
I love the name of this show.
Yes.
And thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to see what happens here.
John, are you a big Frankenstein fan, out of curiosity?
Not at all.
Not that you need to be. I was just wondering.
No, and I'd say it's like in danger of, it's one of those areas like right on the precipice of being overdone, like zombies or vampires. And I was upset when I said, oh, no, Drunk History is doing a Frankenstein thing. No, I the idea first occurred to me just because I pictured David Harbour in the role.
Were you? So could you explain to somebody, to an alien who's just landed on Earth and downloaded Netflix, could you explain the premise of the show?
Of Frankenstein's Monster's Monster Frankenstein.
Correct.
All right. There was an evolution, but at this point, and I'm terrible explaining it, by the way, and when I released the trailer, Max Silvestri texted me to say that this is a better explanation than I'd ever given him in a year of trying to explain the show to him. I'm not that good at that. But anyway, it's as if David Harbour from Stranger Things came from an acting family and his father had made a play for television in the 70s called Frankenstein's Monster's Monster Frankenstein. And in this play for television, David's father played Dr. Frankenstein. This is backstory, who created life. It tried to kill him. He had to kill it first. Since then, he's been perpetrating a hoax where when the funding source shows up, he hires someone to pretend to be him, and he pretends to be the life that he created. So it means that David is going back and forth between speaking as Dr. Frankenstein, and then someone enters the room, and he has to switch it up and pretend to be the monster. And part of what led me to the idea, aside from David's heavy brow, is I love, like, in theater for television, the clunkiness of entrances and exits.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of them here. And also, David's a very accomplished actor. And, like, watching him go back and forth is really entertaining. So things entertain on its own. Like, I think the script I wrote is funny. But it's also got this weird, like, sometimes leaden tone, like Frasier without a laugh track or something. Like, it's odd, you know?
You just hear clomping on like a hollow floor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And like early on, we have like a 30-second entrance, I would say, that a doctor makes coming down this creaky staircase. And then after this long, long entrance down the staircase, there's some unnecessary blocking, and then she finally speaks, and it might be my favorite thing in the show. But it's not funny in that you would know where to laugh.
Right.
Well, we are big fans at Night Call of weird things and of the show Frasier.
Yes.
And of Frankenstein and other monsters. So we were just wondering, like, what were the other inspirations? Were there any horror movies involved in this, or you just were thinking about weird plays?
Okay, so the inspirations, I would say, well, yeah, there was, you know, I rewatched Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein. I would say Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was an inspiration, but it was more just theater and specifically theater for television. So things that we were watching included I, Claudius, and again, like, takes place in ancient Rome. You would think it has nothing in common, but what it has in common with what we did was we were trying to do this, like, ambitious, high-prestige, low-budget television. And
yes.
So when you're watching I, Claudius, someone will be walking away from camera. And first of all, it's a long exit, which I love. But then as they're moving away, you start realizing, okay, that door that they're walking to, that set is completely undressed. And they stuck a couple big candle holders or pillars there,
right,
or something. It's just basically they did not put furniture everywhere because they didn't have the money, but they have this big set. Actors are always positioning themselves in these plays for television to see little performances within the performance. So it's like basically they're sitting around, someone will enter with a report or a story or sing us a song. And the way the other actors will just position themselves to see the play within a play is so fun. Is so funny to me, you know. And so we started just attaching to these little things that were happening in every play that we watched. And the main one was that there's all these jokes about theater and talk about acting and the nature of acting in plays. And like a lot of them are asides, but like you're watching I, Claudius, and like someone makes an announcement: "The emperor is coming. Please stand." And then the other guy says to him, this happens in the foreground for like 30 seconds, "You have a wonderful voice. Are you an actor?" This is ancient Rome. And the guy's like, "Yes, but the work just isn't there anymore. The theater isn't what it used to be." And the other person says, "It never was, my friend." And then on with the scene. And there's like so many things like that in place. Like, so within this play, supposedly about Frankenstein, there's a moment when like David's character does a 2-minute diversion to talk about the nature of acting and what acting is and what acting isn't. And there's like a lot of things like within the play that could be from any play, I would say. We're doing like moments where like mother is dying, but she's introduced in a crazy way where it's like generic. You don't have to know that much. We have mother upstairs who's dying. We have a little niece who does a dance and plays with a gun. But like the backstory is contained within the moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
As fans of the theater,
big fans of theater,
this sounds so good.
It does.
I'm so excited about it.
Well, like, there's something so, I feel like, I mean, I haven't seen I, Claudius, but I feel like there's something about watching, like, filmed stage productions, especially when you're really young, that are just, it's so dreamlike. There's something really hard to, like, it's such a weird kind of unreality. I mean, I feel like one that a lot of, maybe you guys watch this, but like the Mary Martin Peter Pan is one.
Love that. Mary Martin Peter Pan. Brings up a lot of
questions.
Yeah, and I
mean, now there are all these live musicals and everything on NBC and whoever else is doing them now, which is sort of like a weird throwback to this idea of like filming the stage, which is just, I don't know, it's like an interesting thing to do on purpose.
And sometimes now they're including an audience, right?
Yeah.
When they're shooting with them. I think the Jesus Christ Superstar one had an audience in it, but yeah.
I love when they try to make theater edgy. That's my favorite thing also.
We do that too. We have some intense lighting effects. Like, you gotta have the leaf pattern. We don't have the leaf pattern, but like as we were about to start shooting, Eva Anderson sent me the crazy Frankenstein that was done a few years ago in Great Britain where they were switching roles back and forth. Who was it who did it?
I don't remember.
The British David Harbour?
It was the guy who did Slumdog Millionaire.
Danny Boyle?
Oh,
he did it. It was his Frankenstein. And that had like some intense lighting effects that we borrowed and reminded me of like bullshit lighting effects in True West, where it's like suddenly they're brother against brother in the old West. Where, you know, they've been arguing about toasters 5 minutes ago, and now we're doing like a lighting effect as if they're on the prairie
that
or something.
That is the climax of the play. Spoiler alert.
So we've got a couple of those of like really clunky lighting effects that take forever when suddenly we drop the music out of the thing, too, where you just have to wonder, what am I watching? There's a lot of moments in the thing where if anyone made a noise, it would be odd because there is no audience. You'd hear a little cough. You'd have to wonder, who was that?
I do love that weird feeling. I feel like I watched the Bergman Magic Flute that was on PBS a lot. Has that kind of weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like high ambition, low budget, glitter face paint on everybody.
One that people love that I got sucked into yesterday that was so bad, you wouldn't believe it. It's called, I think, The Comedian. It's with Mickey Rooney, maybe written by
I've
Rod Serling,
that.
Right?
Have you?
Yes. And it's like the desperate comedy writer who's stealing material from a dead man, but it's like an hour and a half about comedy without a laugh in it.
Yes. I am the person who bought that Criterion set that was like great filmed plays of the 1950s and 60s and watched them all and was like, these are so weird.
Wait, no, they're not good.
I was like, oh, they're very weird and boring.
My question for John is, what kind of doings do you have? Because my favorite thing about televised plays is the doings, in particular the sweeping of the floor, which
we
have talked about
and
not on this podcast. The sweeping of the floor is the thing that I cannot.
Now when you say doings, what does that mean?
What was the fifth business?
The fifth business
stage
is something
business.
Different that I yoinked from Stephen King, but not doesn't relate to theater. But the fifth business is the agent of change who shows up and is like, I'm chaotic. Now everything's different. I'm moving the plot along.
So it's like sweeping the floor, like you mean within the place. It would be like the stage manager
so
in Our Town or something.
The doings is like you have a monologue, but you have to be doing something. It's either you're putting on your makeup, you're sweeping the floors, you're putting all the drinks away, like all the glasses, you're like manning the bar. A lot of this comes from Horace and Pete.
No, we
putting
do.
Chairs up on tables.
Putting chairs up on tables.
We do have some doings. We have one conversation between David Harbour and Kate Berlant in the lab where it takes you a few seconds to realize that she's climbing on top of him to fuck him during this conversation.
That's a really good doing, and
they treat it sort of that way. It's kind of like, what is this business that's happening? Yeah. And then suddenly you see it from a new angle. It's like, oh God, what's they're really going at it now. We have doings with a. Of course, it's an old play. We have doings with decanters and glasses.
Yes,
and alcohol.
Those are great.
But in this case, we also have test tubes. We have a lot of our doings are around the gun on the stage. And we have one of our sponsors for this play is Chekhov Guns and Ammo. And the gun does go off in the end. So there's the play. I would say of our 28-minute show, maybe 15 minutes of it is the play itself. But there's a few other parts too. There's a documentary aspect where David Harbour, our David Harbour, who we're calling David Harbour III, his father is David Harbour Jr., is looking into this play and interviewing people. So the people he's interviewing are his father's old manager, or his father's old agent and producer, played by Michael Lerner and Mary Warrenoff, who were both so fantastic. They're both about 80 years old with like some memory issues, but that made everything like super realistic too. And then we shot a bunch of archival material too. So we've got like later day David Harbour Jr. in like an awkward MTV type interview in the mid 80s. Based on like in the 80s, you used to see every once in a while someone like Roger Moore would come on the show. And those interviews were always really odd. So we have like one of those interviews on MTV type show. Because Alfred Molina is in Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein. In the backstory, we have that he's the greatest actor in the world.
True story.
Yeah.
He flew over from England to do the part. And he has a TV show called The Actor's Trunk, which we see clips of. Now, in The Actor's Trunk, he has a trunk on stage. I'm Aubrey Fields. This is The Actor's Trunk. And today, our guest is one of my favorite actors, David Harbour Jr., and I've given him a frying pan. And then you'll, like, go to the scene where he's teaching the audience how to act, the audience of, like, acting students using the props in the trunk. And then we had him shooting a commercial for London, USA, a Beef Wellington company, kind of like modeled after the old Orson Welles commercial. It's all very Orson Welles type
stuff we're doing. I just saw, actually, my friend went to, you will know who this person is, Ken Nordine's estate sale, and they had a Orson Welles, like a thing from when Orson Welles would do basically what people do now, where they'll record a video message for you. It was like Orson Welles will do your voiceover for the K-Tel voiceover company.
What?
With this big picture of Orson Welles.
Oh my God.
Very, very amazing.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Oh, and I'll tell you one last theater joke. David Harbour Jr.'s catchphrase, which comes up several times, is, "And that's how I got into Juilliard." And the big drama, I'll give you one spoiler because there's a lot of plot here, is that turns out he did not go to Juilliard.
Oh, snap.
Well, that's the greatest acting of all.
Yes.
Well, we're all very much looking forward to watching the show. You can watch the show on Netflix. It'll be out when this is released because the episode we are making comes out soon.
Well, we have some night calls.
We were going to take a night call. Yeah, oh, I just wanted to plug Dan Longino. Is that how you say it correctly?
Dan Longino, the director.
Dan Longino, yeah.
Can I tell one quick Dan Longino story?
Yeah, sure.
What were you going to say first?
I was going to say it's directed by Dan Longino, who is a friend of the pod and we are big fans of, and you guys work together on Kroll Show. And I think you guys are the masters of doing really specific TV parody stuff that's really funny and weird and nobody else is doing.
So, yeah, Dan was one of the editors the first 2 years of Kroll Show and then became a director season three after Jonathan Kreisel left. He directed Pen 15 and then with this. And, like, Dan's hallmark is he just can't stand anything on screen that seems fake to him. And, like, as an example, we had one moment that we were going to shoot where David was in a white wig as his father, like, looking back on stage. And the kind of, like, everyone's looking at, like, it looks a little cartoony. Hair is messing with it. Okay, I guess it's okay now. And I looked over at Dan, and it seriously looked like Dan was about to cry. And I was like, Dan, what's going on? And he said, it just looks so stupid. And so he was like physically incapable of doing something he thought was that fake. So like hair rushed in, they took off the wig, they like whitened David's hair instead, and it was much better than what we were about to shoot. But like I have this internal mechanism where I was just going to shoot it. I was just like, well, I guess the hair looks stupid. But as a director, like Dan has these checks where he won't do it.
Wow.
It was a wig too far.
He likes authenticity.
Yeah.
Well, we were going to ask a question about authenticity. A night email from friend Ken, night call friend Ken. Hey, Emily, Molly, and Tess. It is 12:20 a.m. in the unseasonably cool suburbs of Milwaukee. I found out about the podcast a few weeks ago, and I've been making my way through the backlog. I just finished an episode where doppelgangers were brought up, and it reminded me of my own story. We were watching a fire safety video in third or fourth grade. A fireman was talking to students in a gym. The camera panned over the crowd and paused on my double. I remember the kids next to me asking if that was me in the video. I was positive it wasn't, but he looked just like me. I distinctly remember feeling uneasy. The camera continued around the crowd, and that's when I saw the one difference between us. He had a wicked rat tail that went halfway down his back. I wonder what cool me is doing now. Take care, Ken.
John, do you have a doppelganger?
I'd like to say no, but a couple times back in the day, this was really irritating to me. Cars stopped on the street and the driver like yelled out excitedly, "Suits," because they thought I was this guy, Rick Hoffman from Suits.
Oh my
God. Who's like
God.
A little pudgier than me. It's like, it's not the most flattering lookalike, but like lookalikes aren't usually that flattering, you know?
Totally. When somebody tells you the person they think looks like you, you're like, them? Really?
Well, but it can be worse if your doppelganger is better looking. Then you're like, oh no, because now I'm the person that I'm going to be the disappointment.
No, wait,
I would prefer.
I'm the poor man, somebody else.
Exactly.
I do have a doppelganger story that just happened.
Oh, tell.
It's a great doppelganger story. I have a doppelganger who runs an Instagram account called Valley Haunts.
I follow that.
Everybody thinks it's me because I also take weird pictures.
You haunt the valley.
I also haunt the valley, and I also take pictures of like weird LA architecture all the time that are very much in the exact same style as this person who goes around documenting all the weird old architecture that still exists in the valley. Her name is Alex, we found out.
Yeah.
Because I was like, who are you? And she was like, I'm a girl named Alex from the valley. She, the other day, messaged me and was like, hey, do you have a brother named Ben? And I was like, yes, I do. And she was like, I also have a brother named
Ben.
What?
Who also
works
with the producer Madlib.
Wait, what?
What?
So it's a double doppelganger. I called my brother. I was like, you know that Simpsons episode where they meet Bort and Eliza?
Right.
And they like solve the crime before them? Like, that's what this felt like. I was like, not only does she run a Weird Valley Instagram? Like he
does work- she look like you, or is her her view is just
I haven't
same
seen a picture of her yet.
Molly yeah. doesn't know what doppelganger means.
This is not my yeah, this yeah. is my
your intellectual doppelganger.
Yes.
Well, it's just
brain in a jar girl ganger.
I guess there's only like two things for kids from the Valley to do is start a weird Instagram account or get into the yeah. underground hip hop game.
Yeah.
Apparently so.
Manage rappers.
I feel like the guy who wrote that email, though, I don't think people really know what they look like. The idea that the camera's going around and then it lands on someone who looks exactly like me. I don't yeah. know that well, I would know that someone looked exactly like
what about
like
when they
me.
Do that horrible I mean, Instagram thing where people are like celebrity twins and everybody is very generous with
oh,
themselves.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, I mean, the fact that it sounds like his classmates, the,
yeah,
the
I think
emailers,
his classmates
are the ones who pointed it out. So that always, because it's always somebody I mean, else I,
and
who
you're
tells
just,
you that
you're
you
just
look like somebody.
It. And the classmates went crazy. I don't know that the classmates said a word. People love to project in their anecdotes that, like, everyone around them had the same reaction that they had.
It's
we
true.
Don't know.
Everybody's probably just freaking out over
guy.
The rat tail.
Have you guys ever had an exact doppelganger? Have you ever seen somebody that looks so much like you it freaked you out?
Yes. Several times. It's for a while, I was my hairstyle and glasses. It was like, that's all you see are glasses and hair, you know, bangs and glasses. So I had several. And then there was apparently there's a couple who lives like about a mile from me. And frequently still people are like, oh, I just saw you walking on Hillhurst. And it was like, wasn't
so we're
me.
We're talking more about like mirror pairs.
Mirror pairs. Yeah.
Not exactly doppelgangers.
I mean, right. not yeah, not like the exact.
Would you say Frankenstein's monster is in any way a doppelganger?
I mean, because David is playing Dr. Frankenstein, who sometimes pretends to be the monster, and then in the flashback when the monster is alive, he plays the monster. It's wall-to-wall doppelgangers.
Would you say right. that this is the first Theranos, that he was just faking, that he had done something in order to advance science because he didn't want to say the science wasn't there yet?
I don't even know when this thing takes place. Like, I don't know if I don't. I
no,
don't know.
Frankenstein
in my own play,
predates Edison. Yeah. Frankenstein predates Edison. She wrote it in like, well, she wrote it in like 1819, and then it came out a couple years later.
Oh,
so
but I was talking about my play, like my play about Dr. Frankenstein. Like, I don't know if I would be surprised if a phone rang or not.
Right.
Amazing. We like things that
I don't
can't
ask
tell.
That's the theater verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly, all yeah. the times at once.
And sometimes I had a very like concrete prop guy who would ask me questions that I was answering metaphorically. And when he would say things to me like, what decade is it? He'd be like, it's not a, it's no decade.
It's the theater.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
The gothic
it's
house.
A, yeah. It's a prestige play.
I was reading about the old dark house genre and finding out that there's this play that's been remade like 5,000 times. That's the Ghostbreakers. That was the beginning of the Universal Horror series.
Oh.
And I like that Frankenstein, like the Frankenstein myth, you can just bring it back over and over again.
The one thing legal told us we couldn't do is like you can't have a green like Frankenstein's public domain, but the Universal Frankenstein is not public domain. Like they created that green creature where if you make it look too much like that, they'll sue you.
Really?
Yes.
That's so weird. How, but I mean, there must be like a list of the things that make that image
right.
copyrightable.
Is Dracula copyrightable?
No.
That's such
or
a
I think yeah. Dracula is public domain, right?
But is the Universal Dracula, like if you get too close to that Dracula.
Are you talking
I don't know.
About the
well,
collar
some...
up?
Yeah.
Kind of, but,
but
you
I
can't,
feel like
can
that was
a
already
an
I feel like that was already an image before Dracula, whereas I do kind of see the case to be made for the Universal Frankenstein because there was no, like all the images or illustrations of Frankenstein prior to that movie look nothing like that. They look
what'd
like kind of
like?
They look kind of zombie-ish. It's like a, like a guy with like, you know, fucked up a scorched scalp or whatever and maybe some stitches on his body, but he's not green and he doesn't have that flat head and he doesn't have bolts
approach?
In his head.
How did you approach conceptualizing what your Frankenstein's monster would look like?
Oh, just that it had, because David was playing his father who had this huge ego, he thought he could do the transitions, David's fictional father, from monster to Dr. Frankenstein purely through acting. So it's like Bradley Cooper Elephant Man.
That's what I was just gonna say.
We did nothing.
Oh my god, the
pure
Bradley
ego.
Cooper Elephant Man.
Because that's the greatest thing an actor can do. Yeah. Is not put on any makeup and transform.
The prosthetic is my soul.
And the transformations were happening kind of fast as like people would enter and exit, like back and forth. That's part of how he was showing off in the fake play.
Can't wait. Well, everybody check out Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein.
Correct.
On Netflix.
You got it.
From John Levenstein, directed by Dan Longino, and starring an all-star cast including David Harbour and Kate Berlant. Kate Berlant, come on Night Call, please.
Oh, yeah, we love you.
We love you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thank you for having me, you guys. This was fun.
Thanks, John.
That's all the Night Calls we have today. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next week. And you can always leave us a question, comment, or fan theory about Midsummer, bats, or Frankenstein, and their monster at 24046-NIGHT. Or leave us a night email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
You are also invited to follow us on our social media. On Twitter, we're nightcallpod. On Instagram and Facebook, we're nightcallpodcast. And we would love your support on Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.